Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Stonic. You're closer than you think to a 202 Stonic with flexible finance plans from your local Kia dealer.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3. And I'm going to go to a call now, and just to let you know, we have distorted the voice to protect the caller's identity. I'm joined on the line now by a mother who finds herself in a very strange position. Lisa, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Lisa, your daughter was recently released from prison, but you weren't happy about that. Can you tell us why you weren't happy and a little bit about your daughter's situation?
My daughter was due to prison sent in October, and in January I received a phone call to say that she was being released from prison.
She's homeless at the moment?
Yeah, that's correct. So over the last few weeks, a month, I have went everywhere to try and get help to get her back into prison, as I feel the streets is no place for any girl to be.
So just to explain to people, your daughter has addiction issues?
That's correct.
And this is a long-running saga for you?
It's on and off the last 5 years. I've walked the streets to try and, you know, help her.
She got a prison sentence, as you say, last October. How long should she have been in prison under that sentence?
I believe she shouldn't have been released from prison till April.
She was released a few months earlier, on early release?
That's correct, in January.
And you say you would have rather if she was stayed in there because you think it is a better place for her in her current circumstances.
Yes, you don't want to see your daughter in the prison, but I also don't want to see my daughter on the streets. I feel if she had been in there and completed a full sentence, it would have been more time for her to come off drugs.
As far as the prison service is concerned, your daughter has completed her sentence. So, of course, they can't keep people beyond that time.
I feel that way. If she's in there, she's getting the help that she does need.
Like, what are your fears for her as the situation is now?
My heart is broke. I can't sleep. I always wait for that knock every door to say she's passed away.
You think that she is in that much danger?
I do, yes.
What do you know about her life right now, Lisa?
She's in a bad place. I think that she needs to go into a drug treatment centre to try and sort her life around. And I don't think it's any life for any girl to be on them streets.
And as you say, this has been going on for 5 years. So have you made attempts over the last 5 years to get your daughter help? Or has she made attempts herself to get help?
I've gone to people that I've known myself that work with drug treatment and that. But as they've told me, she has to herself want to go to these treatments. I've given her the options to go to these people and get the treatment, but no, she doesn't want it.
And she's, as you say, addiction. She's a heroin addict, is she?
She only turned to a heroin addict last year.
As you say, she had other addictions on the way up to becoming a heroin addict.
Yeah, she's smoking weed and that.
When did you last see your daughter, Lisa?
I seen my daughter the last few weeks ago while she was begging out in the street.
Did you just come upon her by accident, or had you been looking for her?
I had been out looking for her just to make sure that she was okay and things like that, but I nearly died and I seen her begging, but what can I do with some mother? Never thought she'd end up that way.
Did you speak to her?
No, she wouldn't. She walked away.
Tell me about your days now. I mean, do you still go out and try and find her?
I still go out. I still worry every night, waiting for that knock at the door. Or if I see a private phone call, I always feel that it's the police that's going to call me to say that she has passed away.
It must have been very difficult to see her begging.
It would, because I should never have to do that in my life. I never had to do that in my life. No, I never wanted to see my child do that in her life.
Do you see any hope for your daughter as things are?
at the minute, I just feel she lost. She needs to find herself and then get all the help she needs. And maybe find, if she does go in and do a long prison sentence, this might be the start for a fresh life, you know, that way.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Lisa. Listen, the very, very best of luck, and the very, very best of luck to your daughter. And I really hope that something turns up to turn the tide for her, and that she does find a future for herself and for yourself. Thanks for calling, Lisa.
Thanks very much.
I want to go now to PJ. PJ, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
PJ, you were listening to Lisa's story there.
Yeah, it's just tragic, you know. Listen, you could hear the pain in the poor woman's voice. It's sad to say that her daughter is now homeless and she's begging on the streets. The other side of that is she's basically hit rock bottom. It doesn't really go much harder than that now. So it could be, you know, a good thing that she's at that place where she's hitting rock bottom and she's out begging, and, you know, it's sad that she's on heroin because it's probably the dodgiest drug out there. The other side of it is, like as the woman said herself, she's being offered help, she's being asked if she want to go to rehab, and the sad thing is she doesn't want it. Maybe she needs to just go another round or two, maybe she has to go deeper, maybe she has to hit rock bottom more. I don't know, but there is help and there is support, and I would emphasise that.
Will you tell us a bit about your own story, PJ?
Well, my own story is, like, I am basically a recovering addict myself. I was on hard drugs for over 16 years, and I barely pulled myself out of it. I had to hit that place, though, where that young girl is now. I had to hit rock bottom. You know, everybody had the best wishes for me to go to places, but really, I didn't want it. And that's what I had to do. I had to go, I had to literally hit rock bottom.
What was your drug of choice, PJ?
Heroin, crack, cocaine, cannabis. I would have started with cannabis. Cannabis would have been a gateway drug for me. Ecstasy, stuff like that, you know.
And that obviously became much more serious when you went on crack cocaine and heroin.
Well, I would have quickly graduated onto heroin and then onto crack cocaine, which led back to heroin and then onto methadone.
What age were you? What age did this all start for you, PJ?
I would have started on, like, heroin when I was in my early 20s. Around 20, 21.
You'd already been in prison at that stage?
I had, yeah. I'd been in prison. I did my first prison sentence at 18.
What was that for?
Just robberies, stuff like that, you know.
It was a serious, it was an armed robbery.
Well, it was, yeah, because I got me 4 years in prison.
Right. Did you get clean while you were in prison?
At that stage, to be honest, I wasn't really on hard drugs. I only really started the hard drugs when I came out. I might have said this before. For me, prison was like college. I got skilled in the ways of criminality. And I would have quickly, you know, knew what I needed to do while I was in there. And I came out and began to hit 20 years of age. I was straight on the heroin, you know. So there would have been drugs available to me while in prison. At 18, I would have only probably smoked a bit of hash, dropped a few pills, and it was only when in my 20s then that I got onto heroin when I left prison, you know.
And was that it then for your 20s? Like how much of your life?
No, I spent nearly 16 years in and out of prison, on drugs, on hard drugs for most of that, you know. I had some mean time, but not much. But like everything you can get on the streets, you can get it in prison.
And were you ever in the situation that this Lisa's daughter is now in, homeless?
For me, near the end, I would have been, couch surfing, living here, staying there, anywhere I could get, if my own circumstances had changed. I think I remember I had to spend one night in a hostel. And at that stage, then, I just said to myself, right, I can't do this anymore. I'm homeless. I'm hit rock bottom. And I think that was the turning point for me. That I just couldn't do it, I didn't want to be out begging on the streets or anything like that,
And then people will really want to know this, because how did you manage it? How did you get clean? And how did you stay clean?
I ended up going into a rehab, and I spent a year and a half in rehab getting clean. I actually spent 12 months in prison prior to that, where I got clean, and while I was in prison then, I just knew that kind of life, that scene, was just waiting to swallow me up again. So I reached out to a couple of rehabs, and I eventually went to a place called Tiglin. And I stayed there for nearly 8 months.
And just go back to that last 12 months in prison, because this is Lisa's idea that the only thing, because her daughter is not volunteering for a rehab scenario.
For me, prison wouldn't be an option. If she thinks it's going to get her clean time, as I said, there's plenty of drugs in the prison. I know the prison authorities do their utmost best to keep everything out there, and they have put in huge measures to stop the flow of drugs, but it's still getting in, and there's still drugs available. It wouldn't be the ideal place, but sometimes, for me, I knew I was finished. I couldn't do it anymore. So when I got to prison, it was just everything had stopped. You get some clean time in there, if it's not, you're just kept away from it, you're isolated from it. But it wouldn't be the ideal place to get person clean,
And was it hard?
Extremely hard. I think for me, the decision to pull away from it and stop taking drugs was huge, because when you're in a place that's all you have, you're surrounded by it. People use it as a coping mechanism to be able to cope with what's going on with them while they're in prison, the first thing you need to realise is that you're sober and you have to cope with this, what has happened. And then you're making a decision to stay clean and sober. So yes, it was tough. It was extremely tough. But it got easier as I went along.
And what kept you going?
What kept me going? Just the whole life. I wanted my life back. I'd literally been battered down to nothing. I lost all my family, my friends. I was literally in prison with nothing left. I've been shot a couple of times. I was in serious trouble, and I just...
You were shot? You were shot?
I was after being shot a couple of times, and...
Was this because of the people you were mixing with?
Obviously, yes.
Were you involved in drug dealing at that stage?
I was involved in everything.
When you look back now at the life you had, do you think about the people you crossed over those years and the people you might have hurt?
I do. And to this day, I'm still making amends for the stuff I did. I got involved with some nasty people. I got involved with the wrong crowd, so to speak. And when you pull away from stuff like that, people kind of don't believe that you're actually doing it. It's some kind of publicity stuff. But for me, it was real. And there was a bit of fear in that as well. Because, I got mixed up with people that, things didn't go right.
PJ, I really want to hear the rest of your story, but that line has just fallen away from us there. But please, we'll stay where you are and we'll try and get you back. In the meantime, I want to go to Willie. Willie White, good afternoon.
How are you? How are you?
I'm very well, Willie. Were you listening to Lisa and PJ there?
I was indeed, yeah.
You will be familiar with that, those stories.
I'm very familiar, yeah. My story will be similar to PJ's, yeah.
Tell us your story. Take us right back.
I see the same kind of cycle, you know. Cannabis from a young, solvent from a young age, and then cannabis, and then kind of graduating on the drugs. Heroin, cocaine, crack, and all the stuff that goes with it.
It was all
institutions, homelessness, living on the streets, stealing from your own family. Yeah, stuff that I'm really ashamed of, but I don't, just to feed an addiction, you know.
When did it all start for you, Willie?
Pretty young age, when I was probably when I was about 8 or 9, taking solvents. Growing up in Valley One where I lived, you know, just kind of had stuff kind of going on at home and was looking for an escape, and that was the easy escape at the time for me. And it's just let on to other stuff, you know.
Are you beside something that's banging there, Willie? I'm just conscious that we might be missing some of your story. Is there something happening?
I actually am indeed. I'm actually in work at the moment, believe it or not. life has changed on, and life has moved a little bit since then.
Could you take a break for a couple of minutes?
Yeah, I couldn't hear Jack one.
Okay, very good. So you were telling us, yeah, growing up in Ballymun,
yeah, so
started very, very young for you.
Yeah, very young, and you know, just kind of graduated and thought it was the cool thing to do and didn't read the small print, I suppose, and then just ended up addicted and ended up on drugs and everything that comes with it. You know, I didn't set out in life to be, my ambitions was never to be a drug addict, you know.
And when you say everything that comes with it, are you talking petty crime, serious crime?
Petty crime more so than anything else. Anytime I ended up inside, it was always to feed the addiction, like, you know, it was always to do with my addiction. So anytime I went there, it was always for drug reasons, you know.
And how many times were you sent to prison?
Numerous times. I don't know exactly how many over the course, but I was there numerous times, yeah.
And when you'd be in prison, would you go on programs? Would you get clean, or would it be just more of the same?
I'd kind of try carry on. You get days where you can use and days where you can't use. You're kind of restricted a bit to what goes on unless you have plenty of money, which wasn't the case with me, you know. So I, you know.
But you found ways to get drugs in prison.
Yeah, you always get ways and means, yeah. Yeah, an addict will always find a scheme or scam to get something, you know, to get by.
And PJ was saying, you know, he lost his family along the way. I think that's a huge issue for a lot of particularly you know, hard users like heroin users or crack cocaine users.
You're so selfish that you don't care about anybody else. The drug takes control. It's not you. You're doing stuff that you don't want to do. You know, there's so much power and control over a bag of powder that it's unbelievable, you know. And it's changed a lot since I was using. It's a lot worse out there, and I know for a fact, you know.
We started off this conversation with Lisa saying she was so worried for her daughter that she wants her back in prison because she thinks that's the only place she's a hope of getting clean.
Lisa's going to run herself ragged running around after her daughter. The only person that can help her daughter is her daughter. She's going to ask for the help. No one else is going to do anything for that girl. And I'm telling you from experience and lots of other people's experience that I know. You know, it's like... I mean, if you're drowning in the sea and people are showing you, you know, throwing your life buoys to get you to grab onto. It's up to you whether you grab it or not. I mean, if you want to drown, you're going to drown. Like, and that's what happens with a lot of addicts that are out there. They know no other way, you know.
Well, will you stay there, Willie, because I want to hear how you turned your life around. But I just want to bring in Seamus Healy now while we sort out your line there. Seamus, good afternoon. Seamus, you lost somebody to addiction.
Yeah, through addiction.
Do you want to tell us?
You have to put it in context. Once somebody is addicted, for some people that's their whole life. They just can't stop. Not that they won't stop. They just can't stop.
Do you want to tell us who you lost?
Well, I don't want to go into the details because of respect to our family and everything else, you know.
Do you think people, there is understanding there for people who find themselves in the situation that Lisa's daughter is in right now?
A lot of people won't. They'll just drive by and say, oh, she should stop, or you have yourself to blame or something. But addiction is addiction. Everybody has addictions, no matter what it is. And that sort of addiction just takes you down the wrong road. You can only do it for so long, your body will give up.
Is there enough help for people in that situation at the moment?
Well, it's the old adage, you have to get better before we can help you. You have to be clean and this sort of thing. If somebody thinks so low that they've nowhere to go, or they're in doorways, or they're going from hostels, they can't get their act together. If you're on the street, if I was on the street tomorrow, I'd turn to drink or drugs to block out reality. Because your reality is you're on the street, you're roaming around the street, one end of the day to the other. You're not going to be a whistling Dixie walking along. You're going to get depressed, and you're going to block it out. And, like, help might be there, and you have to go for it, but, I mean, to get it is very difficult.
There is, of course, what you're talking about then is that cycle, that one thing leads to the other, which leads to the other thing.
Yeah, and that becomes your life. That is your life. That's addiction. Every day, have to get that high or get what I get out of it. Eventually, you're probably not getting the high as all. It's just to be so-called normal, whatever that is. But it just becomes a way of life. And before you know where you are, you'll only last so much. Your body will only take so much abuse before it says, I'm out of here. Good luck. Bye.
But I suppose when you hear the story there of, as again, we go back to Lisa's situation, her daughter's situation, where she says she has tried to convince her daughter to get help and to ask for help, but her daughter doesn't want to know. So, you know, it must be very difficult to try and convince somebody who, you know, doesn't want that, doesn't feel that they can take that help at that time.
Unbelievably difficult, because I hear the last two guys that were on, you lose everything, your friends, your family, everything. Your family should be everything in your life. That's all you have to fall back on in life, your family. But you'll turn away from it. You know, you'll just go off and do your own thing. You just want to know. She has to reach, as somebody said, rock bottom. And hopefully her family will be there to help her then. But that's the only chance. Now she just wants drugs, you know, unfortunately.
Okay, thanks for that, Seamus. I think we have Willie back, because I do want to ask him about what was the turning point. Are you there, Willie?
I am indeed, yeah.
Okay, the line is a bit better, I think. Can you tell us what was the turning point for you? Was there a moment where you can identify that was your...
Yeah, I suppose I just got a moment of clarity when I was in prison for the last time, and I said to myself, what do I want to do? I found a 12-step program in prison, and I knew there was a way out then, so I opted to go that way, try something different, you know?
And this is Narcotics Anonymous. People would be very familiar with Alcoholics Anonymous, but this is the NA program.
Yes, it is indeed.
But it's a very similar idea.
Yes, it is. It's based on the 12 steps, yeah.
And was that it? Was it like...
Well, I wouldn't say that was just it. Like, there was a magic wand waved. I mean, the last 19 years have been... I'm still a work in progress.
Do you still fear...
I know now how to live, and I know how to live my life without the use of drugs.
But does it still hang over you as a fear that you could slip?
Well, I mean, I'm not under any illusion that, you know, if I take my eye off the ball and stop doing what I'm doing, of course. You know, it's like if you don't maintain a car, it's going to break down on you, isn't it? You know, so I've got to look after the self-maintenance of myself and look after myself and, you know, and still attend regular meetings and still, you know, help out people and kind of do what was done for me when I come round first, and that's what helps me. And it's put it this way, it's an awful lot easier than going out and scoring drugs every day.
And you turned your life around in time to get a life back. You have a family now.
I have a family, yeah. I have a lovely family. Come here, I have all the material things, but it's not about the material things. For me, recovery is an inside job. It's about mending yourself from the inside out, you know. And I'm still doing that. I wouldn't say I'm perfect. I have flaws. I have defects of character, and suppose, like everybody. But I mean, I work on them. You know, I know when I'm wrong, and I live an honest life. You know.
And as you say, you now work as a sponsor, or you have put yourself forward as a sponsor for other people in that situation.
Yeah, come here. I help out other people. I do what was done for me. I can only keep what I have by giving it to someone else. You know. That's basically it.
Willie, thanks. Stay with us, Willie, because we've PJ back as well, I think. PJ?
How are you?
PJ, tell us about your life now.
My life today?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, basically, my life today is I'm drug-free, obviously, and I have been for, like, 11 years now. I have a good job. I have a career. And I'm, as Willie just said there, it's all about self-care, and I look after myself, and I just remember that I was given a second chance in life, and I took it, you know. But I worked hard for it, and I still do.
Again, that question that I asked Willie there, is there still something in the back of your mind, a fear that you could go back to the dark days?
I don't know about a fear. There's always the possibility of that. It's all about decisions we make. You know, if you make the wrong decision and you go back down that old road, you know, back to where you came from, there's always a possibility that you could go back there. Now, for me, I don't have any temptation to do that again. But it is there. There is a possibility of that happening. Like, you know, that could happen today. If I made the decision that I can't cope with what's going on around me, so I'm going off to get high. And that's really the roots of addiction. We just can't cope with what's going on around us. So we turn to a substance.
And you work with former addicts now as well?
I don't. I work with young people coming out of care, and I do a bit of voluntary work with addicts.
Oh, so you do early intervention basically to stop people going down.
Yeah, I do, exactly.
This road.
Exactly, yeah.
Is there a lot of help out there for?
There is. Like, as somebody just said there, like, there is help, there is support. But when you're in that situation and you're out on the streets and the only thing that you have going for you is a bag of powder, and that's the only way you're coping, you're not thinking there is support. You might think there is nothing here for me. This is the last stop. But there is hope and there is support. And we have got some great services out there to help people who are still in active addiction.
So what would be the first stop? Like, where should people turn to if you're that low? You have lost your family, you have no home, you have no friends to speak of, and you're on the streets, as you say, and you think that that little bag is the only thing that you have.
Yeah. The first thing, like, there's no magic wand. You can't just wave a wand and say, there you go, you're in rehab. HSC have guidelines now where you have to go off and you have to be medically detoxed and then assessed to be put into rehab. Now, that can happen fairly quick. That can happen within a few weeks. But normally, your doctor would have to provide evidence that you're fit enough to go into rehab. I don't know that young girl's situation. If she's on medication, prescribed pills, there's a chance that she wouldn't be fit enough to go into rehab now, that she would have to be medically detoxed. And even if she's on heroin, she would still have to be medically detoxed. But there is...
Is there enough detox beds out there? Because
There's not enough. There's never enough. But there is beds out there. And with our current climate, with the COVID-19, it's actually a little bit harder for people. There's a lot of rehabs that are even taking people in at the moment. But I do personally know of one or two rehabs that are actually taking people in. And I know the referral process of how to get people into detox centres and get them in, you know. It's at the end of the day, it has to come from the person who needs the help. They have to reach out and say, I've had enough. Can you help me? And normally once they make that step, there's usually somebody on the other end to say, yeah, we can.
That is a voice of hope there, PJ. Thanks for that. I want to go to...
No problem.
I want to go to Eamon. Eamon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Eamon, tell us your story.
My story is I was released from prison in March, just at the start of the COVID. And I had no support at the time.
I'm going to have to leave. We're going to try Eamon's line. We're having a lot of problems with the lines today, but hopefully we'll get Eamon back. Seamus, you're still with us.
Yep.
Listening to PJ there, there is hope if you know the routes off the streets and into these detox programs and rehab programs.
There is hope, yeah. But if you sink so low, you know, if you get a glimmer of hope, or you're knocked back, or you have to be clean for so long, and you take something, oh no, we can't have you in because you have to take in something, and then you go back to what you were taking again. Oh, you know, it's a cycle. You know, it's great to hear those guys out there getting their lives together. Great to hear it. But there's a lot of people out there that don't get that. I mean, the figures for the amount of people that die every year from addiction are going up all the time. And I'm not banging a drum or anything, but you don't hear about it. You know, this program here talks about it, great. But ordinarily, it's someone's family, it's someone's daughter, it's someone's son, it's someone's child, like that lady was on earlier. It's just swept to one side as such. There are some services there, again, as they call it, that'll knock anything on the head again, you know?
Yeah, but it is, I must say, it is great to hear stories from the likes of Willie and PJ that hit, went so low and somehow managed to get it together, get their lives together, and now can look back on that and help other people. I'm going to take a break there. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And going back to that call we had from Lisa at the start of the programme, she told us about coming upon her daughter who is addicted to heroin, begging on the streets effectively and wishing that she had been held in prison for longer, where she thought was the only clean place that her daughter might hope to get clean. Tom, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry, no, because I'm in a bit of a fix here, but I can speak just for a small while. I know exactly where she's coming from. I've had an experience with a family member in a similar situation. And I suppose all I would say at the moment, things are looking much more positive for my family, because my family member is in prison and is doing very well, and is, you know, you can have a logical conversation with them at the moment, and you know, just the fact that they're off the drugs is it makes them into a different person. But yeah, I do think it's very sad, because I think someone with an addiction really isn't a criminal. And unfortunately, we have to criminalise these people to get them off the streets. And that shouldn't be the case, because, you know, surely we should have some kind of services where we can forcibly put people in and get them clean. Because, you know, it's fine to say, because of someone's human rights, you know, you can't force them to get treatment. But at the same time, we can criminalise them. It doesn't really make sense to me. But I suppose on top of that as well, my family member was off of drugs for a while when they left this jurisdiction. It wasn't until they came back here and got into a city centre situation again, started availing of the services, mixing with the wrong people. It just makes it too hard for somebody with an addiction to kick the habit if we centralise our addiction services like that in city centre locations. I'm a firm believer in that.
Yeah, that it brings people into the wrong milieu, basically, when they go for the services, they're meeting the wrong people.
I think we need to put those services more into the community, back into localities, you know, decentralise this problem, because we're really creating ghettos in city centres, and it's just too difficult for people to kick the habit.
But you know, even as you say that it is near impossible to get communities to accept, you know, rehab programs or addiction program centres.
I accept that. But I mean, even on a one-to-one basis, we need to encourage people to get out of those city centre locations. Most of those people are, in my experience anyway, a lot of those people who you see on the street begging probably have a family somewhere who are worried like mad about them, and who would be only too delighted to try and assist in getting involved in their rehabilitation. But what my experience was, and the experience of my family was, is that you're completely shut out. The services, you know, with all this confidentiality and everything, no, you're not really told what's going on with your family member. Once they're over 18, you're basically told, look, they're an adult, they can go and kill themselves if they want. Well, they don't put it as blunt as that, but that's what it translates to. And, you know, you're just shut out of their life. And it's very hard to watch a family member like that, destroying their life like that. And you're just so helpless, you can't do anything. And you have all these services and they take over. And they're all concentrated in city centre locations. And with the best will in the world, they only it's like an academy for addiction, really. And look, this is not just me saying that. There's actually research that from the United States that backs up exactly what I'm saying.
Well, we have a caller who I think might back up a little of what you're saying on another line. Stay with us there for one moment, Tommy, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, you were saying that you had to get away from the people you were hanging around with.
Yes, back in 85, I was in the same situation as Lisa's daughter, and I had to get away. I had to, excuse me, I had to break the circle. I had to get away from everyone I knew, every area I knew, and I found myself in Israel, and thousands of miles away from everyone, didn't know a sinner being, and I found it easier then. But Lisa, I could hear by her voice she's distraught, and she wouldn't be the first mother, and she won't be the last. But our daughter has to give the drugs up for herself. She can't give them up for her mother. It won't work. And more importantly, our daughter can't give up on herself. She must think, I can get through this somehow, some way, someday. I'll get through it. You have to
believe that.
You have to believe that, and you have to transform the four-letter words can't and won't into a three-letter words four-letter words is will, and the three-letter words try. And I mean, it's no easy road, but
it can be done, and you did it, Tommy. Tommy, I'm going to have to leave you go there. We're right out of time. We're over time, actually. Thanks to Tommy and to all our callers on this. The HSE Drugs and Alcohol Helpline is 1-800-459-459. Today's programme was produced by Dave Sherry. Richie Byrne is the researcher, and Dave Gibson was on sound.